time to grab a beer, strap yourselves in, and get ready for another mind-blowing episode of the General Knowledge Podcast. We've talked him up a few times, and now he's finally here to have his say, so let's turn off the television, read between the lies, because you're now with the General of Real News Australia, and my brother-in-arms in the War of Truth, a leader in the realm of alternative media, my man Ethan Nash from Tot News. How the hell are you, bro?
I'm good, General. It's been a while. It's fantastic to finally to be on the show with you. How are you today?
Oh, mate, I'm good. I had a big night last night, actually. I think, as I mentioned, I went and saw the Super Jesus last night with the missus at the zoo in town there in the valley. It was a freaking awesome show. It was so good. It was their 20th anniversary of their release of their album Sumo. So it was, man, it's terrible. They fucking rock hard, man. They've actually gotten better, I reckon.
No, that's good. The zoo's a good venue up there.
Yeah, it was cool. That's actually the first concert I've been to at the zoo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I loved it. It was great.
It's intimate,
yeah. Like, it's not a massive, huge, like, you know, venue like fucking entertainment center or something, but it's a very intimate little venue, and it's good. I loved it.
Yeah, and it would have been good for a returning act like that to come back on their 20th anniversary tour, you know, instead of just the local sort of vibe that you get there. Actually having a lot of people pack into such an intimate venue would have been good.
Yeah, well, they reckon they've played there countless amount of times over the last 20-odd years, so they're big fans of the venue themselves, and I reckon they enjoyed the show almost as much as the crowd did. Like, they just had such a good stage presence, and Sarah McLeod is she's fantastic, actually. She was just tearing it up. She's funny, and she's fucking cheeky as well, but she just loves it, and so that the crowd responds. Tell you what, I've never seen so many lesbians in one place and at one time before, though. She's got a massive gay fan base, I can tell you now.
Oh, here we go.
No disrespect to the lesbians out there. They loved her, and it was good. I'll tell you what, one of them was a dead looker for Cooper Cronkite.
Oh my goodness.
Bit of a laugh. It's all good, though. Mate, well, like I said, we've done three other podcasts, and hopefully the folks out there have had a listen. The first two was just myself and Andy, and then we were able to secure a pretty cool guest for episode number three from the GM Ethics page and the organization. He was fantastic. Back and have a listen to those folks if you haven't yet. But today we finally got him. I've managed to throw a lasso around him and secured him for today's show. So, Ethan, it's so good to have you here, man. It's been a while since we've had a chat on a podcast before. When do you reckon the last time is that we've actually done this?
Yeah, well, I believe we were having a chat about this as we were preparing for the show, General. It's been almost 3 years since we've been on the airwaves together, back for episode 48 or 49, I believe it was, of the Australian Roundtable podcast, just as we were wrapping up season one in 2015. You appeared on a couple of podcasts that season, but that was really the last time we've sort of jumped on the airwaves together. Obviously, our pages and our websites have always been sharing and interacting with each other, but yeah, it's been a while since we've had a chat. It's crazy.
The last time we actually even had a good chat and bumped into each other was, I remember it was maybe a year or two ago at one of the big vaccine rallies in Brisbane. Do you remember that one? We sort of caught up there. We were interviewing a few people and stuff.
Yes, I remember that. I was still on the TOTT News YouTube channel and on the website. Yep. I really appreciated your help that day. It was a mad day running around there, but it was good to see everyone out there, and we got to speak to some great people throughout the day, people that were for vaccination, against vaccination, but everyone that was there just to support freedom of choice and obviously, you know, medical freedom, the decision to make the decision for your children instead of an establishment. So that was really good to catch up there. I think that was the first time we actually met in person.
Yeah, I believe it was. Yep.
Yeah, so that was a pretty special day. I've still got all the videos from that. That was special.
Yep, I'm pretty sure there's still a few of those videos on if people go through the archives of my website and also tottnews.com. I'm sure you can probably dig those up on there as well, folks. So make sure you check it out. So that is Ethan's website as well, by the way, folks. Make sure you head over to tottnews.com. I think it's actually quite synergistic that your website and my website are almost identical. We've actually got the same WordPress theme going, same sort of layouts. You get a really good feel that you almost, that I think people visit both websites, they get a good feel that we're in this together, you know what I mean? Like, there's two alternative news sites in Australia and they're very much similar, and they've got, you know, like you said before, we are sharing each other's content. We both write articles. You do some, Jesus, you got some really good articles up there lately, man. So we want to go through a few of those today as well. Yeah, yeah, no, always been a big fan of the way you write, man, always.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I've it's been a quite a journey for us, General, over these years, connecting, and as you said, it's about, you know, I think we spoke about this years ago about, you know, obviously the value and the need and the importance for a diversification of information in Australia, but also the importance of also presenting to the people that we are a unified front and we are here fighting for the same fight. And I think that it is special that, you know, our websites are very similar, but also have, you know, very different content on there, all related to the same underlying themes. And yeah, it's been a while since, you know, we've been on the airways together, but we've always just been in that same journey ever since, you know, the turn of the decade here in Australia. And it's good to see that a lot more people are starting to get involved and start visiting the websites and tuning into the podcast. It's really, you know, it's really good to see such a wave starting to grow in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've been going with Tot News since about 2011, myself since about 2012. You know, so we've been around a while, and I know a lot of folks out there do follow what we do. I mean, you're approaching the 3,300 mark on the Facebook page likes. You know, RNA's going really well on Facebook as well. Yeah, I've got plenty of subscribers on the website, and likewise for yourself. You know, there is a good sort of WordPress following out there too. A lot of folks are actually on WordPress, all around the world. And they do tend to subscribe and like our work, which is good to see. But I mean, we always want to see more folks out there having a look too. So it's really important. I mean, adding us to your homepage or to your daily news cycle, folks, is probably a good thing to do if you're out there and you want to. Sort of, I mean, we don't put content up on our pages every day, but I mean, usually at least I'm trying to aim for around once a week. I've got something new on there, even once a fortnight. But I mean, look. As much as we hate it, Facebook is really where it's at. And we talked about this just briefly before we started recording the show today, that, you know, it is heavily controlled. There's algorithms out there that are definitely working against us, but at the same token, there are algorithms going with Facebook that do tend to almost work in our favor as well. You know, we were talking about how if we share some sort of content from a reputable, when I say reputable in inverted commas, folks, in quotation marks, yeah, from a reputable news source like ABC or, you know, any of the majors, then if we share that and put our own spin on the content or even make a comment on it, or as I like to do with my propaganda alerts, those articles that we share do tend to reach quite a few people. But a organic post that one of us might make, and I sort of proved this with Ethan today, and he's also done the same, folks, that in preparation for the show, we put up a post saying, recording another podcast today, I'm joined with Ethan, any questions, any topics you want covered, blah, 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 you know, put this up, and we got pretty much, you know, very, very, very low response rates to that, and that was maybe 40-something minutes ago, or even half an hour ago from yours. You know, I'll have a look just now. I've reached 83 people and had 3 engagements, which is ridiculous, because I did a post, you know, maybe even 5 minutes before that, and it's already up to 283 people reached and 33 engagements, and it was a similar, just a meme, you know? So I don't know what the hell Facebook's doing with their algorithms, but sometimes I just want to pack the whole thing and throw it in the bin, but... look, unfortunately, fight fire with fire. It is a good medium to use because we are reaching a lot of people. What do you reckon?
Absolutely, General. I've had a chat about this for years on various shows and on the website about how Facebook is a double-edged sword in a matter of respects. It really is starting to come out that way now with the advancements of marketing, the advancement of Facebook technology, all of the algorithms that they introduced. You got to remember, Twitter didn't exist in before 2008, and all of these websites, especially when we started, General, weren't as advanced as they were now. they didn't even have the algorithm when I started my page. I could share a post and then everyone that liked that page would see that pop up in their newsfeed if they were on Facebook at the time.
Yep.
Whereas now, you know, we went through the processes of Facebook where they introduced the 10% rule where only 10% of your audience will get reached if you share a post. Just that's the standard now. That's when they become a public company, and obviously everyone was talking about, well, that's another way to make revenue, and they, you know, you get all free advertisement on Facebook to the world and blah, 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 and that's fair enough. But where it went wrong is the algorithms are now starting to advance to the point where they can control the flow of information. They can control what you do see in your newsfeed. And even when I started training to become a journalist back in 2011, when I went to a Walkley Media talk, they were saying that 75% of traffic to news websites came from social media. And that was in 2011. So you've got to understand Wow. the power of Facebook to really control people's opinions, to really control the information that they see, because people aren't typing in 9news.com.au anymore. People aren't going to their websites and typing in abc.com.au anymore or whatever the website may be. They're seeing it pop up through their social channels, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, whatever it may be, and that's how they're getting their information. And unfortunately for pages like us, obviously the whole hate speech crackdown, all of the false flags that they've done with information on Facebook, all of the
fake news.
Yeah, the whole fake news campaign drive, the Russia election thing that they've used to justify somewhat of a tightening on these algorithms. It's just come to the point where it does really work against us. But as you said, if you are smart enough and you have been on Facebook as long as we have, you can see how you can still use it in our advantage for now. But general, as I said, how long is that really going to last? If it's advanced this much in 5 years, where's the next 5 years going to lie for information and how people receive it, you know?
Well, it's a good question because there's been a real big push lately, and I noticed this mainly within the last probably 6 to 12 months, that there's been a lot of shadow banning. There's been a lot of curbing of all of the alternative sources on the internet. There's now these, you know, Facebook will have a little thing beneath an article that might have been posted on from an alternative media site, and underneath it, it'll say fact check, and it'll have a little link to Snopes or something. And we all look. There's another background to Snopes that people don't know of. You should really look into that. But you know, they're not as high and mighty as they think they are. They've got a very shady background, but you know, they've now got these fake news like a plug-in almost to try and warn people away that, oh, this, what you're reading isn't real, you know what I mean? So there's all these new things they're putting in, and as a result of this, like I said, over the last 6 to 12 months that this has been happening, now we've got so many of these alternative social media platforms popping up all over the place. You know, Steam It, we've got Minds, you've got The Truth movement from Brendan and Amy Murphy, you know, which you can actually catch RNA on that one there as well. But the only problem is with those ones is, unfortunately, you're preaching to the choir. You know, you're really not reaching a new audience. You're only reaching an audience that you already have, which is a double-edged sword as well, because you do want to convey all that information out there, and you're still reaching people. However, you're not reaching the new people. Like, if you've got a new like to your page on Facebook, someone maybe just joined today, they like one of your posts that they put up, that means there's a certain percentage of their friends that are going to see it and perhaps interact and like or share, and you're going to you're going to drag in some new people via that avenue, whereas that, unfortunately, that won't happen on those other platforms to a degree. They are kind of hamstrung in that regard.
Absolutely, you know?
But it's all, like I said, you're right, it is that double-edged sword, because you, as much as we fucking hate it, you've got to be on there, and you've got to put up with their bullshit, because you're just going to be able to reach a few more minds that way, and that's what it really comes down to. And we all know that, you know, Facebook literally is Big Brother, and you know they are watching us. Just, and you've, that is, I believe, one of the articles you put up. Big Brother is here, and his name is Facebook. You know, that was one of the articles you'd actually written this year, towards the beginning of this year, but it's still relevant as of this time.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So I published a piece at the end of January. Now, this was before things like the Cambridge Analytica scandal come out. And this was right before, you know, as we said, this big purge happened early this month, which was a carry on, you know, 800 pages shut down, which was a carry on from the whole InfoWars saga where they got removed from social media. So I sort of wrote this literally just a couple months before all this started happening, as a way to sort of warn people that the way that, as I said, the flow of information is so vital in forming people's opinions within the public sphere, and Facebook is such a big controller of that. And as you were talking about before, General, yes, there are the organic ways that we can get the information out there, but most of it still remains controlled through all of these algorithms. And so I wanted to publish a piece just running through not so much obviously the control of information, but also some of the other ways that Facebook would also fit the moniker of what George Orwell would describe as the Big Brother in his book 1984. So on that article, I sort of just went through obviously what we were talking about, the control of information, how they're planning to hire 10,000 new staff to work on, quote, safety and security to reduce fake news impressions by 80% on the site, trust indicators, inauthentic accounts. You know, if you look at a post that's being posted now, you know, you'll see little information bubbles. You can actually report posts for fake news now. All of these things that are being introduced only recently, after this whole supposed Russia scandal during the election, now obviously these tools are now being used to justify a massive rollout of that. So I speak on that in the article, but I also talk about obviously some of Facebook's underlying things that are going on behind the scenes and how that does affect the public. So I was talking about how they've acquired a tech firm called Confirm.io. I believe that's what it was. And in the article, what they're doing is Facebook are going to start testing a feature that allows you to unlock your account using a selfie or facial recognition. So in that passage of the article, I just speak on how Facebook is moving to acquire these tech companies, how they're going to be introducing backdoors. And just as you see with your smart technology, everything's going to become fingerprint-based, facial recognition-based. And as we said, with so many people on Facebook and with scandals like the Cambridge Analytica scandal, this could lead to, obviously, some big problems with data and with your identities. And obviously that adds to the moniker that Big Brother, you know, would be Facebook if George Orwell was writing about it today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then obviously just at the end there, I talk about I've named it the attack on children there, which I just essentially just go on to talk about the effects of smart technology on children and how children are being susceptible to Facebook and some of these algorithms that are happening, and really just try, General, to make a big summary of really just how Facebook is beginning these phases of total control, not just of information, but also of identities, also of interests and what have you, and just try to alert the people of that. And as I said, that came out before the Cambridge Analytica scandal, before all of these purges started happening. So I was glad that I got that piece out as quick as I could, because when all of this did start happening, I could see that people were starting to come to my website to revisit that article, which is great, General.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just realized I hadn't actually reblogged that, so I've done that just now. Apologies. But how's this for a quote, mate? Today's selfie is tomorrow's biometric profile. Isn't that
yes.
true?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? No. I shared that from the Digital Rights Watch group on Facebook, and I put that up, and I think that's so poignant. That is absolutely on par. Today's selfie is tomorrow's biometric profile, and that goes into exactly what you were just sort of talking about. You know, we're going to have facial recognition to unlock phones, unlock your data on Facebook. And now there's even a push to, I shared a little earlier, I'm going to try and quickly find it if I can. The Australian government is now wanting to get rid of your plastic driver's license and give you a digital driver's license that you can have on your phone now.
Yeah, absolutely.
There it is. I think you actually shared that when I shared your post. Yeah, you did. I think you've got this on your site, have you? Australia's rapid shift to digital identification and licenses. Have you got that one up on yours?
Yeah, so that's the latest article I posted.
Yeah, let's go into that one. That is so on topic right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you had any experiences with any of this so far, General, throughout your travels? Any, you know, just in general, the sort of shift to the digital era that we're seeing with identities and licenses and everything? What's the perception sort of here in Queensland from your perspective?
Maybe I'm a little bit more not, I wouldn't say old school, but I haven't come across in my own usage any of that as yet, really. But I know for a fact, I mean, you can't even get one of the new smartphones now, you know, the main ones like your Samsungs or your iPhones, without it having to do a facial recognition unlock. You know, that's probably the next sort of thing. I really don't even want to upgrade my current phone to that sort of thing, because I don't want to go through that facial recognition just to unlock my damn phone.
You know what I mean? Absolutely.
Let alone do I not want to have it on, you know, my driver's license on my phone, which means, you know, if you're pulled over on the side of the road and a police officer says you've got your license, you now have to then unlock your phone for him to be able to have a look at your license. And if he takes it out of your hands and you've just handed him your phone that's unlocked and he can go through and, you know, start checking stuff that, you know, you don't even have to give them permission to do that. They can just do that almost these days, you know. It's very scary. I don't like where it's going, and it's not going to a good place, because it makes it, you know, in air quotes, easier and all that sort of stuff for people. We've got to stop, people need to stop falling for that as the motive and the agenda for pushing these things. Or it just makes it easier and it's less, it makes it cheaper and... It's such bullshit. It's not the case. It's making it easier for them to track and trace. That's what I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, General, it's all just about the notions of convenience, of making things easier. You know, I had an article on my website a few years ago about Visa polling customers about paying in the future with a chip in their arm for convenience. This is nothing new, but as you said, General, I keep my ear to the street, but this, I didn't know that this was actually happening across the country, this rapid shift, just as intense as it is, and that's why I felt compelled to write this piece on TOTTnews.com. Excuse me. It was just in relation, like, obviously I start off talking about digital licenses and the shift to that, but then I also go in to start talking about some of the bigger plans with this technology and where it can lead. But as you mentioned, General, I haven't heard much of this in Queensland, and the reason is because only until a couple of hours after I posted this article, which I'll get into in a bit, which was funny enough, Queensland hadn't really made these moves towards the digital era. And I go into it in the article, and it's primarily only been New South Wales and South Australia at the moment. So that's why I hadn't heard about it. But when I did, I obviously had to look into it more. So South Australia, I remember this last year, they became, about this time last year, the first state to offer the option of holding a digital license. And this was after they did successful trials of things like proof of age cards, boat licenses, land registration, all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they formed an app called the My SA Gov app. So what it is, it's pretty much like a wallet which has all of your identification, your different identification on it. And that essentially was the prototype to say to the public, well, look how convenient this is. What if we do it for your licenses as well? So what happened this year in May is they've poured $92 million into the budget, the Australian budget that was released in May. And one of it is it's all concerning that $92 million. It's all concerning digital identity. So what they've announced is that trials have begun in Dubbo in New South Wales for digital licenses. And as I mentioned, just after I posted this article, Queensland also have announced that they'll be trialing digital licenses. So I looked into it a bit more, and Queensland Transport are planning to progressively replace 3 million laminated driver's licenses with smart cards. And what they want to put with those smart cards is facial recognition technology supplied by a company called Unisys, I believe. Yep. That's how it is. Now, what all of this encompasses, General, is that you'll have an app essentially that will show, you know, if your license has been suspended or expired. It will reveal various statistics like demerit points, if you've had any fines, and they'll have like shake features, they said, to, you know, to for identity theft and all that type of stuff. And you'll get different, you know, codes every 30 seconds and all this nonsense. But it really is, General, just the starting phases of this digital era that we've been talking about for years, not just with identity, but now it's starting to come, you know, with money, with licenses. Everything is making, as I said in the title of the article, a rapid shift to this digital era. And it does start with things like identity, because the identity is what's going to form the basis of some of these bigger structures that I go into in the article. But yeah, just on that point, General, it seems like eventually here in Queensland, your license is going to be replaced with a smart car, General. How do you feel about that?
Well, mate, I remember, it feels like only maybe 6 years ago when we literally had, I mean, we were the laughing stock of the nation because we were so fucking backwards. We had the actual laminated piece of paper, which was our driver's license, you know what I mean? And it wasn't, yep. It didn't have a chip in it. It had that special laminate over the top with the sort of the gold kind of colouring to, you know, to signify that it was a legitimate Queensland fucking driver's license. Yeah, it looked like a library card, you know what I mean, to a lot of people. And I remember seeing, because like I said, in the beginning of the, before we started recording pre-show, I used to work at a leagues club in Brisbane, and people from out of state or people who come in would have to show their driver's license and, you know, that sort of thing to prove where you lived because of the liquor licensing laws and so forth. And people from interstate would come in and show their nice, you know, like a credit card, like that was the kind of PVC actual card, was their driver's license from every other state pretty much in the nation.
Yeah,
perhaps maybe not Tasmania, but I could be wrong. And of course we still had those flimsy plastic ones that would peel open if they got wet almost, you know, we had such crappy ones for such a long time. And then it feels like only maybe five or 6 years ago, then we literally only just switched over to those credit card style with the, you know, with the RFID chip in it and all that sort of thing. You know, and
very recently. That
wasn't long ago, like you said. So there definitely is a rapid shift to this because now, like you said, they're pushing for a digital license. You know, it's going to be sitting there, an app on your phone. I mean, granted, yes, we all have I won't say all, but, you know, such a massive percentage of us do have smartphones and stuff, but I'm not comfortable with it. I don't even like, you know, I don't have my credit card saved on my phone so I can do PayPass and tap that sort of stuff, you know, with my phone. I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, those people out there who think it's more convenient and they want to have one of these chips implanted under your skin, I mean, that's the direction we're going in. It's going to be to the point now where, yeah, a child is born. Yeah, here's your digital birth certificate on your brand new child's smart chip, which is going to be implanted in their arm when they're born. And I mean, that's what I see happening within the next bloody 5 years, and that seems to be the way they're wanting to go. Just get everyone chipped, you know, mark of the beast sort of thing happening here. And it's I just don't think we need to go there because it's not for our convenience. It's not inconvenient to carry a license in your pocket, I mean, in your wallet. I don't think there's a drama with that at all. Same with having a few credit cards or, you know, ATM cards, whatever. I mean, we've done this for such a long time. I don't see it as an inconvenience to have to then carry those around, or more convenient, more to the point, to then have to not have them and have everything on a chip or on your smartphone. We don't need it, but that's where they want to go. And I think the reason why they're going that way is a massive push for total control. You know what I mean? If they've got everything in the one place under the one system, it makes it so much easier for them to control every little bit of information about us. You know, biometric data will be saved on there. You know, that's taking things like your facial recognition stuff is another form of biometric data. Yeah, this is where they're pushing us, and I'm a little bit fearful of the direction this is headed, because it's not necessary. It's not, like I said, it's not for our convenience. It's just another form of control.
Exactly, and it's not for any of those things. And if you actually sit down and try to think about this, like, how is it actually more convenient to have to unlock your phone, open an app, wait for an app to load to show your license than just pulling it out of your wallet?
Absolutely.
You know, now it's not even convenient. They're just saying it's convenient and people are believing it. You know, it's not even actually becoming more convenient because, you know, what if you did have to get a chip in your hand? You're going to have to go to doctors to maintain that. You know, it's not convenient at all. So you've got to look at the underlying reasons. And as you said, General, it's because it's a rapid push towards this. And that's why I use the word rapid in the title. I like to think a lot about titles and what I could put in there. And I don't like to use sort of fearful words in a sense, but it is a rapid shift because, as you said, General, this is very new and we've only just, especially in Queensland, come to the new plastic sort of credit card licenses, like you said. And now it just is changing again. And where is it going to change in the future? That's the question. And I dug a little bit deeper on the article and found the group that was responsible behind this push. And there's actually a group in Australia called the Digital Transformation Agency. the DTA, and their goal is to make identities and individuals more monitored, observable, and accountable, is what it says on their website.
That is in the first paragraph under the section building blocks on that article. So, yeah, very important. You've actually even got links to that too, so sorry, go on.
Yeah, so, as you can see there, I like to put hyperlinks and sources in the article so people can go and look it up for themselves. You can go onto their website, see what they're about, maybe find something that I haven't found about them and get back to me about it. But, yeah, they're one of the groups that are doing it, and they're one of the groups that have been behind the push for this national facial recognition system that we've talked about on our website and other sort of moves towards this digital dystopia, as I like to call it. And I go through a couple of examples through this, and I've titled it, as you can see, Building Blocks there. And the reason for building blocks is because even though these concepts might be new to the public, they've actually been at work for a number of years now. And I go through a couple of examples of current systems that are in play. Obviously, we've got the digital ID, which is Australia's Post, which a lot of people don't realize Australia Post is a government-owned corporation, but it is. And they introduced the digital ID, which essentially just this, you know, what they've presented it is that it aids with, you know, everything to do with post to make it easier to identify yourself and parcels, and you can create your account and whatnot. But then I went onto their website and actually had a look at an author that was talking about the digital ID. And if you go on the article on tottnews.com, I've underlined and added emphasis to some of his quotes. What he's really talking about in this article, digital ID, why it's crucial for the new economy, is they're not looking to replicate.
They're coming for you, Ethan.
Yes, I was going
to
say.
sorry, mate. The cops have found you, man. Get out of there.
Yes. Live on the air, General. Keep going without me.
All right, sorry, mate. Keep going.
Sorry about that. There might be an occasional car or two, or I might hear my gate knocked down in a couple seconds. We'll see how we go, General. what he's really stressing in this article is that they're not looking with digital identity to create a copy of your current, say, license, for example. What they're trying to do, and he actually quotes this, he says he wants to create a new kind of identity. So they're not talking about taking your current identity and making a digital copy of it. What they want to do is make an electronic version, in a sense that you know, has different variables on it. So if you go to a pub or a club, they can only access, say, how old you are or your date of birth. If you go to a hospital, for example, they can only access what's on it for medical reasons. So they want to take your identity and sort of categorize it into different aspects and evolve your identity into how it actually plays within in the real world, so they can get a better understanding of you through what they call virtual identities. Now, all they're doing is talking up the good parts about how this can be used. Some of the examples I just used then, but no one's actually talking about how this specific information can also hinder people that are a part of it through scandals like Cambridge Analytica, through what we know, the government, Facebook, all of these companies that sell off mass data and collect and build identities about you. What is that going to mean when your identity then becomes compartmentalized into categories in a digital identity, and they can see exactly what you're doing in every aspect of your life? And this is what this author is talking about on the Australia Post website when he's talking about the digital ID program. And the second one, and we'll go into this in a bit, General, I'll go back to the digital ID, but they're also got a new program that's called GovPass, which is essentially the modern incarnation of the Australia card of the 1980s. So what we've seen over the last decade is these two digital identity bases beside each other. Now with the national facial recognition system that's come in, they're building these systems and they're building these systems, and the key to these systems is your identity. And that's why they're now making the shift to digital identifications and licenses. And once that's complete, they'll be able to really ramp up these systems. And as you said, have you read that quote on the website, General, about digital ID? It really is starting to talk about things that are going just beyond storing or copying your identity, in my opinion.
Is that the one within this article you're talking about now?
Yeah, so I linked to an Australia Post article on digital ID in the building blocks section.
Yes, can I read it out?
Yeah, you can if you're on the have a read.
Yeah, so I'll read this out for everyone. This is the one that Ethan's talking about. It says, and I quote, "What we want is a new kind of identity. What we don't want to do is to take the sorts of identity that we're used to having at the moment, things like passports and driver's licenses, and try to make electronic analogs of those things. Making a sort of electronic version of a driver's license and moving it into the virtual doesn't make any sense. And the reason it doesn't is because identity in the virtual world can do things that identity in the physical world can't." So he says it right there. You know, they're not doing this for our convenience. They're not. They're doing it for their, because it isn't convenient. He basically labels it right there and then. And
absolutely.
This is. I mean, if people aren't reading between the lies on this, what it is about. This is full spectrum surveillance type stuff. You know, this is what we're pushing towards. They want to be able to have every single thing they can on every single person in one convenient location for them, not for us. It's for the institutions and the government and everyone else involved. It's, you know, they want to be able to pull up everything they have on you with the click of a button. I mean, for this, they can almost do that now. You know, I mean, there's so much of our lives that are online and accessible by them. But I mean, if they can have everything in one spot at the push of a button, why wouldn't they want to have that? So this is, they've got to try and get us on board with this. And the only way to do that is to sell it to us as a convenience. And we know that, and anyone who's studied marketing or has worked in marketing or any of that sort of thing knows for a fact that once you start talking about convenience for the consumer or the public, we know that that's a misnomer, because it's not about their convenience. It is about convenience, but for the convenience of the person pushing it, not for the person on the end user. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And then that's what, and we know with, you know, like, your census data gets sold off. The government made $160 million off of the last census, selling your data off to sales companies and marketing companies. Like, it's not hidden conspiracy theory information. It's very public knowledge over the last decade, and even more people are paying attention to it now with scandals like Cambridge Analytica, with, you know, the fact that the government is two times more likely per capita in Australia to spy on you than the Australian government is. Statistically, you know, people are starting to wake up to these things. And when you just put the quotes of these people out in front of them, you know, it really does paint the picture of what they're trying to do. And that is not just create a digital identification of yourself, a replica of what you would have in your wallet, but to also then advance it to the point where they can not only have just your standard details to either market to or watch or control or whatever it is that they sell it off to or whoever gets their hands on it, but it's about advancing it to the point where everyone can get something from your identity, whether it be the medical industry, whether it be the police, whether it be your job. It's all going to be divided into categories. It's all going to be digital. It's all going to have detailed points of where you've been, what you've done, what your interests are, where you go. And it's really going to be identity in the new era. And that's what I really go into in the next piece of the article. And I talk about GovPass, which is really the main part of this system general. And I like to guide people through a story through my website. So now you've seen the digital licenses, obviously, programs that are already in place. And now the GovPass program, which essentially is, you know, it's a digital identity program where you can access government services, which will be coming out with 100 points of ID. So your Centrelink, your Medicare, what will eventually be your driver's licenses, your registration, your house, everything is going to be on this one little app. And, you know, it's going to have features like uploading a selfie for checking, you know, your passport or your driver's license photos. It's going to have facial recognition. It's going to have all of these advanced notions. But what I talk about in this article is this is very similar to the Australia card of the 1980s that they tried to introduce, General. And there was a big backlash to that at the time. And it's surprising that just within, what, say 30 years, it was the late 80s when this obviously started to become a national issue. But just within that 30, 35 year period, General, who is opposing this type of stuff now? It's very interesting to see how the Australia card was almost like a test back in the day to see how people would react. And now all of a sudden we've had a campaign over decades of convenience, of, you know, just intricate small rollouts of little things that add to a bigger picture. And now here we are at the GovPass program, which is pretty much a modern incarnation of the Australia Card, more advanced version, and nobody's opposing it like it did back in the day. Do you have any memory or basis of the Australia Card generally, and what are your thoughts on this whole notion that it was sort of, in my opinion, an experiment to get these later programs passed, in my opinion?
100%, Ethan, you're absolutely right. They test the waters with these things, and they have a look at the backlash, they have a look at the comments, they go back. These people aren't on the same timeline that we're on. I mean, they can do these things over decades and decades, and this is proof in the pudding right here. I mean, this, we're talking about Australia Card back in 1985 or whatever it was when they were trying to push this through. And because we weren't ready for it back then, we didn't have a digital information age back then. You know, we didn't even have smartphones back then, you know what I mean? So this was all very new to everyone, and that's what scared us. But now people are so willing and able to accept these things. You know, I mean, I guarantee you that there's no one out there who has read an end-user license agreement to anything that they've done digitally online or a new phone that they've bought. They just accept, yes, yes, to I agree to this without reading anything. And so they know that we don't. So hence the now push for it once again, because they know we're ready to accept it. I mean, we're not ready. You and I aren't ready. And the people listening to this hopefully aren't ready as well. But there's such a big portion of us out there that are just going to take it. They're just going to accept it. You know what I mean?
We're talking absolutely that
full spectrum surveillance, and people still have that notion that, well, I've got nothing to hide, so there's, you know, there's no problem with it. They can look all they want. I've got nothing to hide.
Yeah, the famous.
Everyone has something to hide. You have your own privacy. You know what I mean? If you give up that right to privacy, then you have nothing. You know, and people need to understand that.
Absolutely, and if this stuff can get through so easy, then what's next? You know what I mean? What's coming next after this? And even if you're a person that, let's say, you don't believe that this is for nefarious reasons, then there are a lot of people out there that, you know, are very positive to how technology can help us going into the future. But even if you don't see that there's a problem now with where this is going, what happens in the future if, you know, some tyrannical government or something like that takes control? What happens if some figure arises 30 years from now, 50 years from now, and all of these systems and laws are in place? You know, there's not the appropriate safeguards. We don't even have legislation in place to protect against these things, yet they're rolling them out so rapidly, so fast, and over time as well. As we were just talking about, in 1985, it was just mentioned in a few words in a tax reform paper back in the day, and they were just talking about the possibility of a national identification system, and people were mass protests in the street. You know, there was a 1987 campaign against the national ID card, which is well documented. It ended up in a double dissolution, and you know, we ended up with, you know, lots of problems within, you know, Australian politics just off of the notion of potentially introducing one. And people raised their arms. Well, certainly they've learnt from that, General, and they've come back a lot of years later when everyone is more susceptible to technology. They're not as concerned about it anymore. But most people couldn't even tell you where their smartphone come from, what the companies are, what these apps are, but they'll just give up their freedoms for it. It's just, it's such an interesting thing, General, and that's why I wanted to talk about it in this article, to see just within that period how one generation could be so against something like this, and then just one generation later, in a sense, it's welcomed, and people are talking about how we can progress this further. It really is, it's a profound thing, and it really is a testament to the social engineers that are out there. You know, it absolutely really sums up what they're doing in over a long period of time, General.
I'll tell you what scares the shit out of me with regards to this, mate, is the fact that how often are we seeing within the last couple of years and months that, oh, this particular email host has been hacked. Oh, this particular credit card company has been hacked and details leaked. Oh, this particular government agency has had all of their information hacked. Oh, this, you know what I mean? It is endless. Mm-hmm. It is endless to the amount of information that is floating around out there on the dark web for anyone to purchase. And they want us to have everything about us in one spot so they can have it easily accessible. I mean, yeah, it's going to be easily accessible to the hackers out there that are able to do this. And I tell you what, this isn't, you know, Russian hackers or, you know, some friggin' fat bastard behind a computer, you know, just sitting there night after night punching, you know, ones and zeros and trying to get break past someone's firewall to get all their details just so we can fucking jerk off over it or something. This is about, I reckon this is more to do with intelligence agencies and, you know, we're talking the Five Eyes network and, you know, Echelon, that sort of thing, that are behind all of the snooping that is going on around the world. They want to be able to access this information on the spot, you know what I mean? And at the moment, they're finding themselves having to do it through back doors and you know, bypassing encryption methods and so forth. But if they're given a free pass to this, then there is no stopping them, and it'll be out there for everyone to see. You know what I mean? And that's the scary part about it, is this information and everything about you will be able to be accessed by anyone who has the means and wants that information. If they want it, they'll get it. You know what I mean? So it's best not to have the information out there to begin with. That's what I
absolutely reckon. Yeah, absolutely. And this is, yeah, you can just see all of the examples. Like, I'm glad we spoke about Facebook before, because Facebook's a perfect example of exactly what we're talking about. Like, what better way to spy on the people than for them to tell you what they're doing? Exactly. You don't have to spy on them. Now you can upload how you're feeling, your location, where you're traveling to, all of your photos that get uploaded. Like,
let's not forget that, you know, Facebook was started with seed money from CIA front companies, you know what I mean? Like, these guys in the intelligence organizations were behind sponsoring this sort of effort to get people out there. And, you know, Zuckerberg is tied heavily into these mobs.
Are you telling me, General, that Mark Zuckerberg wasn't just some genius like the movies told me? Are you telling me that he didn't just come up with this on his own?
maybe. Yeah, I know. It's funny. People still think that he's just some computer nerd out there wanting to, you know, cotton on to all the chicks in his dorm room there. You've got the phone running hot in the background there for all these leads coming through.
yes. Mate, yeah, no, sorry about that.
You're right now. We'll just let that go. Let's have a change of pace here. And what else have you got on your...
Well, I just wanted finish with... obviously, I do pretty big articles, but the final point with that article was just some, you know, it's just some predictions of where this might head, this type of technology. And we can already see the China social credit system over in China is a perfect example of how, you know, this technology can fall into the wrong hands and can be used as a detriment against the people. And we're seeing that in China now with, you know, what is it, 300 million, 400 million CCTV cameras that can spot a person out of 100,000 people, you know, like with really advanced stuff.
With facial recognition technology.
Yeah, with facial recognition technology.
I'm going to go on a limb here and be a little bit racist, but, if, you know, we're talking facial recognition technology that's that good in China.
Yes.
I know I sound like a fucking bigot when I say that, but, I mean, there's a lot of them that do look very similar, and these guys look, you know, so similar, and this technology can pick them apart, you know, in an instant.
No,
I know that sounds bad to the folks out there, but hey, look, that's just the reality of the situation.
It is. Well, it is an observation, you know. You can see, and studies have shown this, that, you know, people from, you know, Eastern cultures are definitely more susceptible. Let's look at countries like North Korea and Japan and China, you know, fashion, hair design, all that type of stuff is very similar. So as you said, General, for them to be able to use this technology in a country that, you know, isn't as diverse as us in a lot of senses, you know, they're still a very nationalist country over there. You know, for them to be able to do that with that type of technology, and then you've got other things like the social credit system that they've introduced now, where you can't apply for bank loans or you can't get, you know, you can't travel on planes and airfares if you have a certain sort of social credit score on your app, your government app. And this is
exactly whenever they want.
Yeah, they can just do that. And this is actually happening in China right now.
In real time, too.
Right now. And I've linked to a couple articles on there. And one article I linked to was the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, the ASPI. They've actually attacked the DTA about this type of these type of moves to build these programs, because as I said earlier, we don't have the legislative protections to prevent from ending up in a Chinese social credit system just like this. And they actually speak about it in a pretty big report that I've linked to on there as well. So it's not just us saying this, it's not some conspiracy. We actually have you know, Australia's most influential national security policy think tank, the ASPI, also expressing concerns about how these programs like digital licenses, like GovPass, like digital ID can all end up in a dystopia like China is experiencing right now. So that's all in the article on TOTTnews.com. I know we spent a bit of time on that, General, but it's so important to just go through all of that and really paint to the people where this type of technology is heading, because it all does stem from, as we said, this push for convenience, this notion that things are going to get easier, when in fact the only people it's going to get easier for is the people that benefit from your data, General.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Fantastic article there, mate. Fuck, have I even shared this? I'm sure I did.
I'm sure you did, General.
Oh, I shared it on Facebook, but I haven't reblogged. I'll reblog that right now. I tend to always share it on Facebook first and always forget about reblogging it, so apologies there, mate, but I'll do that right now.
Beautiful.
If we can just...
bit of a change of pace.
Yeah, let's change pace a little bit here. And I've got... There's two articles I just wanted to sort of quickly bring up over there on realnewsaustralia.com. For the folks who have been keeping their finger on the pulse with regards to what's happening over in Canada. And I'll go out on a limb here and just let everyone know, as much as I support it and push it, I personally have I've never actually even used cannabis in my life. I'm all for it, and if it's made legal, then yeah, I'll be on the bandwagon as well, and I'll be happy to consume it. I do think it's probably more beneficial than alcohol, and that's been proven as well. There's so many bad things with regards to alcohol and alcoholism, and the amount of negativity that surrounds alcohol, yet cannabis, unfortunately, it gets a bad rap when it's never killed anyone before. You know what I mean? But, there might be detrimental effects with people overusage and all that sort of stuff, but, I mean, look at the overusage with alcohol compared to cannabis. I can guarantee you that the alcohol is much worse, and yet it's 100% legal and can be, hence I'm consuming some right now with this Rip Snorter Aussie IPA, which I've just finished. in moderation, of course.
Drink responsibly.
Folks, so I put this one up on October 18th, which was cannabis, recreational cannabis now legal in Canada. So it was, as of that article going up, it was a day old where it was now legal in Canada to purchase marijuana for recreational use, and people can also own a few plants in their home. So well done to Canada for stepping into the modern age, and they are now the second country in the entire world that has gone full legality with regards to the recreational use of cannabis. So the other one is Uruguay. They're the only other country in the world that has gone completely legal with weed. We do know that in the US there's I think maybe 7 states in the US. I did put that in the article, so I'm just spitballing here. I can't quite remember. But yeah, there's a few states in the US which have legalized cannabis for recreational use as well. However, it is still illegal on a federal level, yet the states are actually choosing to ignore that federal law, which is awesome. And I do love the fact that there are states standing up to the big federal government. So that's the sort of thing that needs to happen here in Australia as well. Realize that we do have the power. But I mean, news.com.au, ABC, these news sites were putting out polls asking the Australian public, recreational marijuana use is now legal in Canada. Should Australia adopt this law? Now, they've pretty much posed the same question. I've only got a screenshot of there of one of them, which was from news.com.au, and there was, you know, nearly 30,000, well, probably by the time it ended, there would have been over 30,000 people polled, and with a resounding over 80% saying that it should be. So, I mean, I know that's still 30,000 people that have been polled out of the population of, what, 24 million in Australia, roughly. But I can tell you now that so many more people want Australia to step into the 21st century and actually legalize it, or at the very least decriminalize it. I know it has been decriminalized in some of the states here in Australia. It's, you know, South Australia, for example, that you can actually possess small quantities of cannabis, which is decriminalized. But I mean, if you are caught with it, you will get slapped with a fine, but you won't get a criminal record or anything, that sort of thing. But we need to look. We just really need to go full legalization. You know, Canada. In the article here, Canada is now awoken, and the government there has finally ended a prohibition on smoking weed. And there are, of course, still some restrictions and rules for pot smokers to follow. But all in all, the people of Canada are, of course, celebrating. And I think within one day, I saw a follow-up article that was put out, and all of the recreational cannabis dispensaries that were allowed to fully open on the day of legalization, every single one of them had sold out in a day. You know what I mean? So that tells you something, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, they all had their own methods of obtaining it from, you know, so-called illegal dealers and so forth. But now that everyone was going... Yeah, I mean, that just shows you the uptake, doesn't it? I mean, everyone wanted it legalized, and they went the proper route. They went through a proper dispensary and bought legal weed, and they sold out in a day. I mean, this is the entire country we're talking about here. And I think Canada has a little bit larger population than we do. I think they're maybe, what are they, 50 million or something, or 30 million people over there? It's not too much bigger than Australia.
No, very similar.
Yeah, it is pretty similar. I mean, they are also part of the Commonwealth as well. So, I mean, look, if a Commonwealth nation out there can do it, then so can we. You still there?
Yeah, sorry, mate. Yeah, no, absolutely. I saw this pop up and I thought that it was great news. You know, it's as you said, it's time for countries to start coming into the 20th century and really 21st century rather, and really just adapting to what the people want. You know, it started as a campaign in the early 20th century, you know, with some funky tactics that were going on to introduce certain words like marijuana and really criminalize the use of what was hemp at the time, cannabis. Within the public, and it's just been a campaign of, you know, like the war on drugs, all of these failed campaigns that have just happened over the years. It's about time that the countries like this start coming into the 21st century, start realizing that this is what the people need, start realizing the benefits that it can bring, not just to the public, but also to the government, to the economy, and then it's also double good because it allows people like us, General, to start talking about some of the greater uses that can be used
with
the plant, and how that can also start to break some of the larger structures that we have in place. So I think it's good. Like, I'm more of a fan of decriminalization than legalization, because I still think that there could be potential in the future for the government to have complete control over the substance, which could just, you know, be just as worse of a situation. Yeah, and it's good to see examples like this of, you know, where it becomes legalized, so you can actually study how the government are actually responding to these type of things, and where it's been obviously in the United States, California, some of these other countries like Uruguay that have legalized it, you can start to see that, you know, it is a beneficial thing. It's boosted the economy, crime rates have come down, it really has been a positive, and it's good to see that there's such a push over here to try and get it legal, even though that there's a lot more power play over here that's trying to suppress it. Obviously,
Scott Morrison's already come out on the record and saying he's against it, so he doesn't want it legalized. That's
of course.
ScoMo is, of course, for those out there listening, that is our new Prime Minister. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure Turnbull was also against the legalization of it as well.
Yeah, and it's all just been smoke and mirrors over here, General. Like, it's been legalized and they've had medical trials and everything, but if you actually go to your doctor, you pay your $400 consultation appointment and then get put on a waiting list, there's only been like six people or whatever that have been approved since it started. And one lady was reporting that she had to pay $40,000 a year just to go get an ounce of weed a week from the medical supplies. So,
there was none available. She was treating her son who's got epilepsy and cerebral palsy, and there was no CBD oil available in Australia, so that is coming from Canada, funnily enough, and it's costing her $40,000 a year. Yeah, you're right. It's ridiculous.
And so you just start to see how when there's structure around this type of thing, that it can be used, obviously, just as the same way alcohol and other big business uses it. But for the moment, it definitely looks like just a positive thing. You know, if our passports weren't turning to facial recognition soon, I might have booked a house over there for a little bit, see how it goes, do some first-hand documentation myself. it really is good. It's good to see, Canada is a great country over there, very similar to ours. It's good to see them to get on the wave, and hopefully this leads to different sorts of waves. And then, obviously, as I said, we can push for some of those underlying reasons, and we can also monitor how the government and the medical industry react to it, General.
Yeah, well, mate, back in on the 14th of January, 2014, I actually put up this article titled "Trials for Medicinal Cannabis in Australia on the Horizon," and it was a question. So that was 4 years ago, over 4 years ago now that I put that up, and of course, 4 years later, here we are. We now, with restrictions and they've made it difficult, but it is now, medicinal cannabis is now available in Australia. So, we sort of we asked the question 4 years ago, and it was definitely on the horizon because here it is. But there's still, like you said, there are obviously still heavy restrictions surrounding it. And I was able to actually interview Dr. Andrew Catalaris, who's, he has a pseudonym here in Australia called Dr. Pot, I think he goes by. But, Dr. Andrew Catalaris is very much heavily behind the use of CBD and cannabis tinctures and so forth for medical reasons.
Yep.
I was able to ask him, I said, hit me with some little known facts about cannabis, and I'll just read 8 here that some people might not be aware of. So, number one, cannabis hemp is humanity's oldest cultivated crop. In the 19th century, hemp was the most cultivated crop on earth, and hemp fiber the most traded commodity. So people probably don't really know that, but cannabis was made illegal in the United States in 1937 by a consortium of corrupt police, bankers, and the DuPont Chemical Company to allow the synthetic nylon to gain market dominance. So there you go, big business having their hands in it then. Cannabis number 3, cannabis produces the world's most durable natural fiber. Number 4, hemp is very beneficial agronomically. It is a hardy, self-mulching weed smother crop, which conditions the soil, resulting in enhanced yields in following crops. So yield after yield, the crop is almost bigger and better every time. Number 5, cannabis hemp produces the safest of all pharmacologically active substances, with no deaths ever having been attributed to its use. Despite stringent claims to the contrary, recent evidence has established it amongst the world's most broadly acting medical substances, with marked activity against spasticity and seizure disorders, chronic pain, inflammatory bowel disease, and a host of other ailments, often where all other medication has failed. Number 7, published evidence has now established that cannabis has a profound anti-cancer effect across many tumor types with no associated toxicity. Number 8, the National Institute of Health conducted research intending to prove that smoking cannabis caused respiratory disease and lung cancer, but finally published the data that it was protective against both. So there you go, even the misnomer that people put out there, smoking cannabis will give you lung cancer and so forth, that unfortunately they're wrong. It will actually, in turn, the smoking of it, there are chemicals involved in causing cancer. However, because it contains those such positive things like the CBD and all those cannabidiol substances, they will actually counteract those cancer-causing chemicals and everything anyway, so it negates it in the end. So there you go. There's a few little-known facts there, but there's plenty more out there as well. So that was put out, like I said, in 2014. So we've been covering this topic for quite a while now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a testament, General, to what we're talking about, some of those underlying uses that really are some of the driving forces as to why this has stayed illegal and why there's such a push all across the world against getting this legal, is because of some of those underlying uses that it can be used for. Like, I published an article on TOTTnews.com during, I call it a hot topic feature, where if there's a hot topic happening within the news at the moment, I can write a piece on it. And it was when, that flammable cladding crisis was happening, all of the buildings that were full of flammable cladding. And everyone was talking about the solutions for that. And I just put up an article saying the solution to it is hempcrete, and started talking about the benefits of hempcrete and all of the buildings that have been built in Australia at the moment. Like there's Balanced Earth Building and some of these fantastic companies down Byron Way that are building houses. You can actually contract them to build out of hempcrete now. There's hemp seeds that are being legalized to be put into food. You can get hemp oils and whatnot now.
Yeah, we use hemp oil and we use hemp seeds here in my house. We've been using it. Even if we've been using it before it was made legal for food consumption, but now that it is, we have no qualms talking about it.
Yeah, Steve, perfect example. It's good to see that a lot of these things are happening, and it's good to see that people are being educated general on the fact that there are greater uses to this, and it's not the evil bad drug that the movies and TV told you about. It actually can be quite beneficial to society, even if you don't believe in smoking it, or even if you have never smoked it. There's plenty of other ways that it could be used. Fuel, clothing, the list goes on and on.
It's an absolute industry-destroying product, which is why they will not want to make... they don't want to make it legal. That's why there's so many industries, like we said in the article, the DuPont company back in the day in the 30s made it. They had a big push to make it illegal because they wanted to produce their own synthetic fibers, even though the cannabis plant fibers were outperforming it. They wanted to push their own products and they've of course now held it back for all that time. And there's like I said, there's the agrochemical industries, there's the plastics industries, there's the fiber industries, like the cotton industries, that are trying to also lobbyists are trying to help keep this made illegal because they don't want it out there. Imagine if it was made illegal. All they've got to do, instead of putting all this time and effort and money behind making it illegal and keeping it illegal, is to get behind it and then start new industries and, maybe they... I don't want to use the term dominate, but they could then open up another market, Like, I don't mind if it's still controlled by the Cotton Growers Association or whatever, As long as it's then made... It's now a legal product, then we can actually have another product we can use that's better than what they've been pushing in the past, and then they can make the slow switch over to having that particular one. But they're looking at this in the wrong way. I think it's there's more positives than negatives, but I just think it's that whole people don't want to change, and these companies, they've got the stranglehold on the market as it is, and they want to keep it that way for the time being. But look, change is coming. We've just discussed so many little things that Australia and New Zealand were the only two countries globally that had hemp products made illegal for human consumption. And now that's now changed, so we can now legally consume hemp products as a food. There was no reason why it shouldn't. In the entire world, two countries, come on. But now that's changed. We've now got medicinal cannabis opened up to us. It's not as hard to get into at the moment. I'm sure that will change for the better. And like we were talking about, there's now big pushes. There's polls being put out by mainstream media, and Australia is speaking. They want it changed, and I think that is the way we're going to go. Maybe slowly by little bit, it will get there. But I think give it some time. Maybe within the next, I'm going to say within the next 5 years, I reckon it'll be at the very least decriminalized for the entire country. Maybe not legal. Maybe it might be state by state here doing little things, but I think within 5 years it'll be full decriminalisation, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you were talking about the trials coming 4 years ago, and the trials are here now. So it just seems like that's the way that it's heading, General. And I'm excited for it because I've got a lot of ideas that I can push within that realm. It's a lot harder to do it when it's just legal in other countries, but it's so beneficial, especially over here. It could reinvigorate the farming industry in Australia. Yep. It could do a whole bunch of things, and I look forward to if we do reach that point.
It's a massive money spinner we're missing out on.
Yeah, and I look forward to putting those ideas out there when it does come. So I'm looking forward to it way beyond just the current, notions that people are for it at the moment. I'm looking forward to the future of using the precedent of it being legal to then try and implement even further change beyond that.
Yeah. Hey, folks out there, listen to this if you didn't know this for a fact. The first fleet that arrived here in Australia, the ropes and sails on those boats were made from hemp fiber. So there you go, hemp linen.
There you go.
That's what they made ropes and sails out of back in the day, and that's what they used to get here in the first place. So put it that way. Let's just grow up and make it legal or decriminalize it.
Yep.
All right. The other thing I just wanted to mention too was something that sort of piqued my interest, and it was in the news cycle nonstop for, geez, maybe about a month, month and a half, and it has, of course, since pretty much dropped off the news cycle, which is, of course, talking about the drought relief for the farmers. Yeah, we've had such a dry spell out west in the rural areas of Australia, and for quite a while now too, they've had very little rain. More towards the coastlines of the eastern part of Australia. So for those anyone listening overseas, we've got Queensland is our eastern northern state, then New South Wales, and of course our capital territory within New South Wales underneath, and Victoria underneath that as well. But along the coastline, we're not too bad. When you start going about 50 to 100, probably 100 Ks in, that's when it starts getting a little bit drier, and then when you go about 200 Ks inland past the Great Dividing Range, that's when it is dry as fuck out there, and they're getting very little rain out there, guys. So, hence there was a big push for quite a while, and the mainstream media sort of cottoned on and picked up on this about the plight of our brothers and sisters out in the West in their drought conditions. Now, they, of course, made a massive push, all their morning TV shows and the news. It was, like I said, in the news cycle for quite a while. Everything was talking about the drought and helping the farmers out, you know, donating to all these charities, buy a bale, you know, sending. And now, buy a bale, I know they definitely are doing it. They've even been cataloguing video-wise with all their trucks heading out west with masses of loads of hay bales for the stock to eat, because they've got nothing out there to eat, and all these farmers are unfortunately losing all their stock. But all of this money that was donated, there was about $50 million Australia-wide that was donated from all of our giving Aussies out there, and this money, there's about $20 million of that $50 million that can't be accounted for. Now, it's either been misused or they just can't find where that money is. That's $20 million of the $50 million that was donated, and that is pretty shocking in terms of, you know, I don't think it's misuse. I reckon it's either stolen money, or it's gone into these charities' coffers, and they're not passing it on to those who actually need it. And so I've mentioned that in the article. We're sort of talking about a link to a few of the articles out there. You know, a lot of charities out there do have a bad track record of giving. There's a few web pages out there. A lot of these are mainly overseas that have a shocking track record in terms of giving money back to the charities that they're talking about. You know, they deliver very little of the funds that they actually gather, and the rest of it goes into running these companies and what they call administration costs. And you start seeing these charity CEOs driving around in fucking Bentleys and all that sort of stuff, you know where the money's going. Now, several of the charities in charge of distributing the $50 million to Australian farmers is now under investigation and may actually face fraud charges. So which is a good thing that these people have actually sort of cottoned on to what's actually going on and the theft that's occurring. But I remember seeing a comment in one of the Facebook threads, and this was, I sort of had a look at his profile. I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but you know, he did appear to come from a western town in far western Queensland. I do believe he was a farmer. He did say he was a farmer in one of these rural communities. And this was something that he said, and it's not exactly a quote word for word, but I remembered it as best as I could, and I think it's something that Australia really needs to sort of pay attention to, because sitting here simply, you know, punching in your credit card numbers on a website of a charity saying, you know, they're going to pass this money on to a needy family or a farmer or whatnot, look, it's a good thought, but that's not the way to fix this issue. For those out there that do have the ability to actually do this, this is what I think you should do. Now, this is what I also think you should do, is what the farmer said that people should do. I'll read the quote here. It says, "Get in your car, drive about 8 hours into the rural parts of Queensland and New South Wales, stop in small towns along the way for a bite to eat, fill up the tank, fill up your petrol tank. When you've reached a farming town, stay at the local hotel or inn, buy a meal, go shopping in the town, grab a hair car, get the car service, buy some locally made souvenirs and buy a few boxes of locally grown produce, then buy a load of groceries and drive to one of the farmer's properties whom you've met at the local pub, give them the groceries and perhaps some spare cash." Now, of course, what he's really saying there is, you know, taking a weekend trip out to rural parts of our country and seeing countryside and spending some time with these people, giving yourself a mini holiday, you're going to do more for these people and these communities than simply writing a check or punching in, you know, a few credit card numbers on these websites, because that's gonna boost these local economies, and those local economies spend their money within their local community. You know what I mean? So it goes around a circle there, and that's going to help them. Like I said, donating money to some random charity you don't know, or has only started up in the last month or so. You know what I mean? That only a small portion of that may actually go to helping someone. Whereas you take the actual time and do what he's suggesting, that is going to make a massive difference. And if we had maybe only 10,000 Australians do that, that's going to do more than this 50 million will actually do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, and it's a perfect example of just, you know, how people just really need to look at what they're actually, I'm not sure what the word is here, but what they're looking at, what they're researching, what they're donating to, what they're actually investing their energy into. You know, just because someone else says that is what it's for, it doesn't mean that's what it's for, you know. I saw a few sponsored posts come up on Facebook that were just people trying to quickly cash in on the crisis at the moment. And people are just not diligent enough when they actually are looking at these companies. And as you said, General, look at the companies that were founded a month ago, or their ABN started this month, or whatever the case may be, because where is all the money going? Where are all the results that everyone has been talking about that's coming to aid the farmers? Because I don't see too much of it that's happening. You know, it's like the old notion of the World Vision ads and all this type of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Where do you think all that money's going? Do you think World Vision just make a $200 million commercial and then, you know, don't have enough money to give to these kids? It's all a business. Charity is the biggest business of them all. It's the one that you can get back on tax. It's why people donate to charities. And it just seems like people aren't diligent enough, General. And it is great that you put that on the article, that quote by that farmer there, because you know, people really do need to just start getting involved on a grassroots level and not just going online and putting in the click of a button and giving your bank details over to someone that you don't even know who it is and from an industry that has a proven track record of being shady. So, yeah, I'm definitely glad that you put that up, General, and hopefully it makes people think a little bit more about their actions going forward.
Yeah, and look, we don't want to turn people away from that philanthropic bone in their body, you know what I mean? It's great to see that so many Australians are so giving. It just goes to show you the support is out there. It just needs to be harnessed in the right way. And that can be said about us on so many levels, where it's almost a mismanagement of our society in general, you know what I mean? They put it in the media, they push it in down our throats, and they say, donate, 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 look, you know, do the right thing, help these people out. But is that really helping them out? Just because someone on the mainstream, you know, Koshy's up there telling you to do it, is he right? No, I don't think he is. He's right in the sense that we should be giving. However, the method with which we do it really needs to be looked at again. That's the main message here. Let's do it right in the first place, and not just you know, try and get that little release of endorphins just by putting in your credit card details and feeling good about yourself, because that's only going to last a few seconds. But when you're actually seeing these people face to face and seeing their plight, and then, you know, giving these farmers, you know, $100 out of your own wallet face to face and handing it, putting it in their hand and shaking their hand and giving them some groceries, you know, giving them a month's supply of toilet paper, for crying out loud, you know, like, these are the things that are going to make a difference to these folks, and helping their little towns and communities and seeing it firsthand, that's what's going to make a difference. Not sitting there, you know, writing a check for these folks. It's not going to do the right thing.
Look, again, absolutely.
We're a very philanthropic nation. We do give a lot. There's a lot of people out there who are willing to give. Just do it. Let's just do it right. That's the whole message.
Yep, absolutely. Just do it right and just be diligent of what you're doing. Just take the time to research. And as I said, it's a lot more than, you know, in a crisis, changing your Facebook photo to support whichever town got bombed or whatever it is. It's more than just the internet realm. It's about going out there and actually trying to get involved in a way. And if you want to connect with that community, actually making the effort to do that. And it's great that you put that article up there, General.
I mean, I will actually tie this into a lot of the cancer charities that are out there. Will I donate to one of these cancer council or charity things? No, never will I ever give any money to any of these people or shave for a cure and all that sort of stuff, because this money that gets raised, you may feel so good about raising this money because a loved one has cancer or is going through it, or you know, a friend or something. But raising money and then giving it to some, what they call research foundation, these people aren't researching for a cure. It's not shave for a cure. It's shave for a treatment. You know, these companies want to develop a treatment for cancer. They don't want to develop a cure for cancer. There are cures for cancer.
Great point.
You know what I mean? Like, don't give your money to these people trying to, you know, develop a treatment for cancer. You need to start, if you want to start acting serious about this and raising money for someone, how about actually pushing and raising, I would like to see an organization, and there may be some out there, but I don't know of them, but I'd like to see an organization that raises money in these sort of situations and makes, and their mission is to raise awareness of everything in our lives that is causing cancer and making and bringing that to the forefront so people can limit their exposure and try and stop all of this happening in the first place. Prevention is better than a cure. Okay?
Exactly. It's like that old notion. It's like that old notion general they celebrate. Oh, we've cured this many people this year from this disease. And it's, well, who's asking the question, why is there so much of that disease in the first place?
Yep.
You know, it's...
Yep.
As you said, it's about creating a treatment, not a cure. It's a business. The medical industry is one of the biggest businesses. It's one of the big six on the stock exchange. It's a massive profitable company and industry, rather. And it's exactly what we see with all of these things, like the Cancer Council, all of this type of nonsense that's out there. It's all about, you know, going to that grassroots level, finding the local community groups, finding the local farmers, finding the local, you know, group that's actually helping people with cancer, you know, whatever it may be, just going beyond that step. If you do care enough and you want to give, and as you said, there's a lot of people here that want to give, but it's just about going that one step further and not just doing it to make yourself feel better, but actually doing it to try and make a difference and try and make an impact. And I think that's really the most important message here, General.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of looking at causes for cancer, which I mentioned before, one thing I think that people who may not really be aware of, I haven't seen too much of this in the mainstream, a lot of independent media is covering this worldwide, but and I think we talked about this on podcast episode number 3 with our guest, the gentleman who is suing Monsanto with regards to his cancer caused by the glyphosate in the Roundup that he was using. Now, there was a real worry that, because what happened was the jury awarded, you know, the jury said Monsanto's guilty. They awarded the man, I think it was, forgive me for getting this incorrect, but it was something like $286 million with regards to a payout. Now, the real worry was that Monsanto or Bayer was going to appeal the decision, which of course they would. And what happens when they appeal is that it no longer then goes to a jury. It goes back into the hands of the judge to actually rule a decision on that. So the jury is then taken out of the equation. So that's the scary part about it. However, some of the jurors spoke out and really wanted the judge to uphold the decision. The judge did uphold the decision. However, the judge felt necessary to reduce the payout down to around 70-something million, which, look, the guy's not going to be able to be alive around long to see that much money, but hopefully he puts it to a good cause. So as a result of this information, and the minute that verdict was upheld and the judge made that decision, Bayer's, who owns now or has purchased Monsanto for something like $4 billion, massive buyout from Bayer of Monsanto.
It was a huge merger.
It was. Now, Bayer's stock absolutely crashes after that Monsanto cancer verdict is upheld by the judge, and analysts estimate $800 billion in future liability cases that could result of this. So, unfortunately, Bayer has now swallowed the poison pill of Monsanto here, and you know they've really shot themselves in the foot by purchasing this company. I reckon Monsanto, the reason why they sold their company and agreed to a buyout by Bayer, they knew this was in the works. This was not chance here, folks. You know, you don't get a company that's this big and this powerful selling out when they don't need to. You know what I mean? Like, now they've the Monsanto board and everyone else have pretty much washed their hands of all of this, and now Bayer is left with this bill And yeah, they're going to have to not only pay the payout for the gentleman who had sued them, but now they're going to suffer the stock loss. They're going to suffer now because the precedent has now been set in the legal system over there. Now, class action lawsuits hopefully will start arising because there's still something like nearly 9,000 plaintiffs out there that are believed to have cancer as a result of glyphosate exposure. So that's going to be massive. Keep an eye on this one, folks. Yeah, look, it is good to see because... I mean, it's been talked about for so long that this product causes cancer, you know what I mean? So, I will go on the record in saying this, that I, in the past, and even currently, as you know, for a profession, I'm a gardener, and I've used this product, but I've been tried my best to be very careful with it. However, I've now stopped using that product, and I now use an organic herbicide, which is a plant-based acid, so it even works better and faster than the stupid Roundup stuff.
Well, I was going to ask that, General. I know that you've been exposed to the product a lot. It's good to see that here in Australia that there's a big push too, like people campaigning Bunnings to remove it from their shelves. Absolutely. The Cancer Council here coming out saying that the verdict really concerns them as well. So it is good to see that it, not just overseas, but here in Australia, there is some positive results. Like I know people that didn't even know that there was poison in it. I mentioned it to them and they said, oh, I used that last week. The wind blew it all over me. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like, this is unbelievable what they've been allowed to get away with. So to see this type of precedent set within the legal system, to see it uphold, it's a fantastic result.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing some of these big conglomerates get what's coming to them, General.
Yeah. And this... Well, that's why I sort of wanted to tie it into that whole charitable donation thing with regards to these cancer companies, because if you had the Cancer Council out there full well knowing that this product now knows that this product and the verdict has been upheld, that this product causes cancer, you need to have organisations such as the Cancer Council of Australia and all those ones similar to it with regards to these products causing cancer, absolutely throwing all of their money and campaigning and lobbying anyone who sells these products to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If we're not seeing that, then we know that they're not in this for our benefit and to stay away from throwing your money at these sort of companies because they're not doing the right thing by us.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, if they're not out there saying and lobbying and you know, this needs to be on the bloody news, that on the mainstream media news, that the Cancer Council now recommends ditching Roundup and all this sort of stuff. These are things we need to start seeing. If they're not doing it, we know they're not doing the right thing with the money donated to them by giving Australians. So steer clear of them. Start trying to support organisations that are raising awareness of these things. And this doesn't just go with regards to glyphosate and Roundup sort of stuff. I'm talking organisations and not non-profit organisations that are trying to raise awareness and push for the government to do the right thing with regards to laws and things in regards to things like GM. You know, I mean, we talked about that on episode 3 with our guest. You know, we need to have organizations like this saying, hey, look, let's just not make this stuff legal. Let's use that sort of, what was the term you used? I can't remember the term you used now, but if we don't know enough about it, then let's not make it legal. You know, let's do all the right studies and have all the right independent studies and checking all those things first. Yeah, so that's where we need to go. They're the sort of organisations that need your charity and helping lobby the government for the right reasons and not putting their money towards nefarious or wasted administration costs and so forth. So that's where we're at. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
mate, have you got anything else? Because I'm done on my side of things on the stuff I want to talk about. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up, mate?
No, General. I'm glad we spoke about the combination of Facebook and also the biometric dystopia, as I like to call it, that is approaching. I've got a little update on the Facebook post, General. We're at 11 people reached now in 1 hour.
Whoa, calm down.
And one engagement, which was yourself. So.
Thanks, Facebook. Fuck you. Anyway,
we've hit the big time, General. Out of 3,300 people, only 11 people apparently were on Facebook at the time to see that. no, it's just thought I'd give you an update on that. It's definitely definitely glad we spoke about that today. But it was really good to get on and have a chat with you, General. I don't really have much else to talk about unless you do.
I do. I just wanted to sort of quickly bring in, I've almost forgot about it too. We had the national fuel strike on Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought we might just quickly get onto this topic here, because this sort of came out of nowhere. There was a lady who thought, yeah, bugger this, I've had enough of these high fuel prices, let's start a Facebook campaign. And before she knew it, she had a national fuel strike campaign on her hands, and she sort of ran with it. And look, the whole idea behind this was to try and I think people think that it was about punishing the fuel companies and not buying their product, but look, that isn't actually what I think this fuel strike was about. It was more of a show of force to say that, hey, look, you're fucking with us with putting all these fuel prices through the roof. We don't like it, and we're going to show you that we can marshal a whole bunch of people together, and we won't buy your product on a particular day, and we're going to show you that we can do this. I think that was what it was actually really about. It wasn't about saying, yeah, let's punish small business owners who might own a petrol station and and make them suffer by not earning their money in the day, you know. So a lot of the independents I know, they pay a lot of money to have their fuel delivered to them, and where they actually make their money is products in the store. You know, that's why they've got all these things in your face and they suggestive sell to you at the counter when you're purchasing your fuel. That's where their money is actually made, is the retail side of the store part of it, because they're making, oh Jesus, it's only a couple of cents on the dollar on every tank of fuel, you know what I mean? On every liter of fuel that you're actually purchasing from them, they're making a few cents on it. Because of the taxes involved and because of the high prices involved from these actual big fuel companies. And what people fail to realise is that Australia only has one fuel refinery. That is the BP refinery out there at Murarrie, I think it is, near the Port of Brisbane out there. That is the only refinery in Queensland. I don't know if it's in the entire nation, and I don't know enough about that there, so people, look, if you're listening to this, shoot us a message and let us know if you know for sure. But you know, all the fuel that in Queensland comes, if it's refined here, it comes from that refinery, you know what I mean? So if they're shipping crude oil via the tankers here, it comes into the port, BP will refine that into the fuel, and then they on-sell that to all of the other fuel providers in the market. So they're the ones that are winning out of this is BP, because, like I said, unless they're buying the refined product and bringing it in via the tankers and then selling it, we're pretty much at the mercy of Singapore, because that's where the majority of it, I'm pretty sure, is coming from on the our Asia side of things.
Absolutely.
I shared that meme as well. That was one thing that we sort of talked about pre-show was with regards to the reach that we're having. You know, I shared a meme, folks, that you've probably seen, and I know you've probably seen it because it's been shared over 290 times now. It's been shared, I've reached over 16,000 people with that particular post, and it's had over 1,800 engagements. So, it is, that meme itself that I put up is about 2 years out of date, but the message of the meme, I think, is what was really important. The meme showed it says oil price April of the year, and it's got the year there. From 2010 to 2015, I'll just read the prices there, $91, $116, $108, $96, $100, then in 2015, $60, and then it's got current, which would have been, I'm not sure when it was created, $39.7. So someone posted that the current price is around $75 at the moment, so it's, which is probably back around that $100 a barrel price again.
Yep.
But look at the price at the pump. The pump price is through the roof, you know what I mean? And back in 2014, the pump price, well, it was getting up there, but it was still probably, you know, 30 cents cheaper than what it is now. So what's, you know, it clearly shows you that it's massive gouging and greed by these petrol companies. And I'm really trying to figure out what it is actually all about. What is their motive for punishing us so badly here? We just had that's another thing we should probably talk about, and maybe the next show, Ethan, is the TPP has now been ratified by Australia, so we are now unable to get out of the TPP. We're hooked into that now, so we should probably dig into that one a bit more in next week's or in a fortnight's show when we can get on again. But I as soon as that was ratified, I started seeing these massive fuel jumps, these massive prices in fuel going through the roof, and I'm wondering, I don't know if there's a connection there or not, but I think there's more to it, and I'd like to know what's really going on here. Like we say, we've got to try and read between the lies here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to spend an episode talking about just the fuel industry in general, you know, going into more details about what oil is, where it comes from, you know, the just the industry in general. But, you know, as you said, there's definitely just, you know, on the at the front end of the whole process, the fuel bowser and the fuel and the servos. As you said, we're seeing that there is clear manipulation and shady business going on. And then that's why it was so good to see this protest come general, because people are fed up. And as you said, I've heard a lot of people talking about, well, what was the actual result of this, blah, blah, blah. And as you said, I don't think it was mainly about making a result. It was about making a statement. You know, they got a lot of exposure within the media. They had, you know, it was like 120,000 people or whatever the last time I checked were attending. And I know a lot of people that actually did fill up and not fill up on that day.
Yeah,
so
I avoided it. I got mine before then.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you can see that this is something that has worked. And I've always spoke about the notion of people will still get upset if it directly affects them. It just people just don't feel like a lot of these things like politics and whatnot directly affect them, even though it will and at the end game will affect them. Mm. And even now it does affect them and they don't even know how it is affecting them. But when you actually see whether it's children or whether it's the cost of living or things like that, people, especially in Australia, still do care about those sorts of things. And it was good to see that even if it was, you know, the Facebook, you know, sort of progressive side of things that come together to do this, it's still good to see that you can still get a mass amount of people through the power of technology, through Facebook of all mediums together to do something like this and to also get, you know, the media to give some, you know, exposure to it and to really make the fuel industries think, because I've said it a million times, General, this is all a house of cards. You know, we are at the bottom and they are at the top of this house of cards. And if we just moved, everything would collapse. We have the power here mm-hmm. in our hands. And I reckon this would have been a little taste, General, for the fuel companies to realize, oh, they're starting to realize the power is in their hands. And if we do keep this up, it could lead to maybe a more mobilized action in the future. Who knows? But this was definitely a positive thing, General, to see that this is a start. And it was really just, it was organically born, not from some massive group, not from some campaign or get-up or something like this. It was just from people that were sick of it.
Mate. Yep.
Yeah, that had an idea. Like, I was reading all the comments and everything in there, and she was saying, like, hey, I didn't expect it to get this big. You know, I'm still working out all the ideas and all that type of stuff. So it was good to see that it was organic too and that people, you know, got on board and hopefully, who knows, in the future it could lead to something that does implement change, because we do have the power. It is the house of cards. And if we just moved, then they've got nothing to stand on, no legs to stand on, General. So hopefully it is the start of something bigger to come.
Mate, you couldn't be more right. And let's bring this round full circle and tie that off, because what you've talked about before with regards to all of this biometric digital surveillance and everything else going on, putting us on a China-like system, reward-based system. If we're on that system and we try and organize something like this, do you really think it's going to happen? No. It will not happen. We will not get that far if we try to organize something like this if we are under that particular system, which is where they're trying to take us. So this is why it's so important, folks. This is why we're trying to bring this to the forefront and tell you what's going on, and we're going to leave it in your hands to do something about it. We can only bring that information to you and try and direct you in the right direction, folks. That's our job. That is what we're in this for. And look, we're happy to do it. We're going to keep doing it. Ethan, mate, it's been so good having you on the podcast today. Finally got you strapped into the chair.
Finally.
Picked your brain.
Only a couple of interruptions, you know, a police raid and, you know, leads coming into the phone. It's all happening.
It's Action Central over there at Tot News Central. mate, it's so good to fucking talk to you again, man. I'm just absolutely keen to get on again. Let's get Andy in the show next time. The three of us doing a bit of almost a round table again. Mr. Kraz, if you're listening, I couldn't unfortunately do a show. I was going to do a show with Adam on Thursday, but we had a massive storm roll through on Thursday and I couldn't do a show with an electrical storm happening, and I've got a tin roof on my house too, so it's deafening at the most. So I couldn't do a show tonight. So I'll get on with you, Adam, soon. And we might even have you on with Andy and Ethan as well. It'd be good to just shoot the shit with all four of us having a go. There's so much to cover, so much going on. Ethan, thanks so much for joining us on the show, man, and it's going to be great to have you back again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, General. It's, as I said at the start, it's great to finally be back on the airways with you, to, you know, have Andy involved, to see you doing a podcast, to see us still doing well, and to see that a lot of the stuff we're talking about, people are really starting to get behind and really starting to pay attention to. So hopefully we can provide a platform for them to come to listen to like-minded ideas and to really, you know, just give them that food of thought for their own lives and anything else that they want to do. So it's just good to have the gang back together. And I felt we had a great episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this podcast goes, General. Yep. So thank you.
Absolutely, man. Can't wait to listen to this once I put it up. I'll try and get this up straight away tonight. And folks out there listening, please do give us a 5-star rating and a review on iTunes. Subscribe to us. Share it around. That's how you can help us get this show moving along and put it out there. And folks, if you've got any questions or comments or any topics you want to bring up there, mate, guys out there, please just send us a message on Facebook, either Ethan or myself, or an email, or whatever it is. You can reach us. We do make it very easy for you to reach us. Even if you've got something you really want to talk about, even if you want to come on the show for 5 minutes, I don't care. Let us know. We'll see what we can do for you, folks. We're here to bring you the information. If you've got information that you want out there, yeah, just let us know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, man. No, I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully more people get involved as well.
Absolutely.
More podcasts, more websites. It's not just us doing it. We want to see everyone here getting involved. We don't claim to be the be all end alls of information. We want perspectives. And if you're out there and you're listening to this, definitely get in contact with us and we'll see what we can do.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, General. Appreciate it.
All right, bro. We'll sign off now. And we'll get in touch and do another show soon.